So at this point, he says, the soul suffers much. The soul, they say, like a dove, now hovers above the ground. She uses her mantle to cover her face as she's terrified by the sight of God. But her right hand opens in acceptance of Noah's dove. And then this wonderful, absolutely fantastic couple of lines. So good, it's worth hearing it in Spanish. Mi amado, las montañas, los valles solitarios nemorosos, las ínsulas extrañas, los ríos sonorosos, el silbo de los aires amorosos, la noche sosegada, enfada los levantes del aurora, la música calada, la soledad sonora, la cena que recrea y enamora. How, as I said at the beginning, to talk of God. Thousands of people spoke to you, and I do not understand their babbling, he said. So in the answer to that question, he produces these lines. My beloved is the mountain, and the sisters of Brookmore here. The lonely wooded valleys. Strange islands. Remember, this is the time of the Columbus, Conquistadores, bringing back all these extraordinary things. And these wonderful descriptions they're bringing back. He says, just read you the strange islands. Strange islands, Don the professor, strange islands are surrounded by water and situated far across the sea, far withdrawn and out, cut off from communication with other people. Many things, very different from what we have here, are born and nurtured in these islands. They are of many strange kinds and powers never before seen. They cause surprise and wonder in anyone who sees them. Thus, because of the wonderful new things and the strange knowledge, far removed from common knowledge, which the soul sees in God, she calls him my strange island. This oddness, as we move into the life of the Spirit, the oddness, the strangeness of this new life that we begin. Ignatius Loyola, after his conversion in his diary, after some events that have happened, he said, how strange is this new life that I have. The tranquil night, Noche Sosegada, again a key metaphor. We're not talking about, you know, a wet November night in Kilburn. We're talking about the warm Spanish night. I mean, if you go to Spain in the summer, if you only really do things at night, night is the time when people come alive. Night is the time of things happening. Time of union, the time when lovers meet. It's a very, very rich metaphor. The time of the rising dawn. Silent music, again, music again, but now that other, better music. Sounding solitude. The whistling of love-stirring breezes. This is Elijah, in reference to, remembering Elijah is in his cave. God doesn't come in the thunder, the earthquake, but in the gentle breeze. Elijah in his cave. Rather sweetly. The supper that refreshes and deepens love. This is the Eucharist. And now she's experiencing, says the sisters, the spiritual union and enjoying the delights of it. Catch us the little foxes. For our vineyard is now in flower, while we fashion a cone of roses, intricate as the time. Of course, Teresa, the passions of the soul that lead us away from God are the lizards and snakes. So, John, they're the little foxes, and there they are. Running around. I have foxes in my garden, pain. I wish someone would catch my little foxes. But the little foxes are the passions that run awry, and these angel helpers are helping direct them towards God. We don't get rid of the passions. Very important thing that John learned. John's theology, John's spirituality is very much a desert theology of spirituality. We don't destroy the passions, but we transform the passions. And next, the invocation to the Holy Spirit. Be still, deadening north wind, south wind come, you that waken love. It's important. Call, invocation, Vene Sancte Spiritus, to come and reorder the passions. Christ sits, saving nuns, in the centre, in repose, contemplating the spell of the flowers. And now the nymphas de Judea, the girls of Judea. While among flowers and roses, the amber spreads its perfume. They endeavour, says John, to move and attract the intellect that it may be wed to them. And they strive to bring the rational part into conformity and unity with the sensory. The icon, says the nuns, is the soul in the loggia of contemplation. She keeps her attention fixed the loved one, and now she holds the prayer, the Jewish prayer shawl, the talit, which is a symbol of dedication to prayer. This is the swift-winged birds, los aves ligares, the lions, stags, and leaping roes, all symbols of the passions. By the pleasant lyres and the siren's song, I urge you to cease your anger. This is, again, this reordering of the... He calls it the wandering fantasy of imaginative power. When you go into... When we had a quarter of an hour silence at the beginning of the morning, you sit down, the first thing that happens is you're thinking of, that letter that arrived this morning, bank balance, going back this evening, and then I didn't buy any milk this morning, so if I go to Tesco, these are the swift wing birds, this is the constant clack of the mind, and they're going to be, by the pleasant lyres, they're going to be reordered, they're going to be gently brought into line. The soul, they write, this is John, the soul sleeps safely, protected by the force of an enormous dragon from others, and lulled to sleep. And this now, verse 22, Embradose en la esposa, bride has entered the sweet garden of her desire. It's the beginning of what both Teresa and John call the spiritual marriage. He quotes the Song of Songs, winter is now past, the rain is gone, and the flowers have appeared in our land. And the sisters mention the phrase from St. Paul here, I live now, not I, but Christ lives in me. She pushes back the red curtain to enter the garden of love. And she wears now a cloth, colour of the purple of Phoenicia, a reflection of the divine blue of the Saviour. So she's moved from her red mantle to her purple mantle. And the icon reflects the image of the beloved disciple reclining on Christ's breast at the Last Supper. Christ blesses the bride and whispers secrets in her ear. Beneath the apple tree, again the phrase from from the Song of Songs. The bridegroom here, says John, reveals his most wonderful secrets to the soul with remarkable ease and frequency. Under the apple tree of paradise, symbol of the tree of good and evil, he redeems Eve from a grotto under the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Christ lovingly divests himself of divinity to save the loved one. The waters of baptism lie underneath, all are clothed in gold. And now, the image of the marriage bed. Our bed is in flower, bound round the linking dens of lions. A true transformation of the whole person. It's like the oriental icon of Easter, say the nuns. The women running to the tomb, carrying spices and fragrance. Santiago de la Cuela. The love of God is not jealous. He bestows his grace on all. The Mother of God appears on this icon, the first disciple. Here's the wine bar. En la interior bodega, the interior wine bar within. In the inner wine cellar, I drank of my beloved, and when I went abroad through all this valley, I no longer knew anything, and lost the herd which I was following. So we have the interior experience, and then we leave the interior, they suggest, to move out. Go out into the world. The soul leaves the temple, says the nuns, in a hurry to serve Christ, with the prayer shawl we saw earlier to represent total union with the divine. Pues ya fiel en el ejército. There he gave me rest, there he taught me a sweet and living knowledge. The soul is now lost to God, and John at this point extols interior contemplation. And at this point, all the images begin to cluster together, speaking of the flowers and emeralds that the Lord is bringing, with flowers and emeralds, number 30, with flowers and emeralds chosen on cool mornings. Shall weave garlands flowering in your love and bound with one hair of mine. Like Mary Magdala or Mary of Bethany, the bride sits now at the feet of Christ in an alabaster vase, with fresh flowers cut in the morning dew. She uses flowers to prepare the white crown of virgins and doctors and the red crown of martyrs. And he gives her the emerald, the symbol of all his gifts. The white dove, and key phrase for number 34, the small white dove, a key phrase for Teresa as well as John. This is again the solitude that guides her. Gocémonos, amor amado. This is the groom pointing to the cave and the mysteries of the Passion, the ultimate mystery of Christianity, the ultimate mystery of John. John, the Passion, the cross, is the centre of the Christian life. And at this point, Christ points to his Passion as the source. The supernatural and the natural combine at this point. Above them, the three angels, got their heads chopped off, three angels that are down there, so you can see them. Juliet, I thought. They meet under the Jewish tally. This is the wedding ceremony. With the seraphim on the left. Now the final wonderful verses, verses 39 and 40. El aspira del aere, el canto della dolce Filomena, el sotto y su domare, en la noche serena, serene night again, con llama que consuma y no da pena, with the flame which is consuming pain. So again, these two key metaphors, the serene night and the flame. The nightingale. When we were in Avila this year, the nightingale, it was like the end of spring, really, and it was their final fling. And they were just going mad. And one night I couldn't sleep. There were six of them singing all along. And he writes, just as the nightingale, there's the nightingale. Just as the nightingale begins its song in the spring, once the wintry, cold, rain and changes have passed, and provides melody for the ear and refreshment for the spirit. So in this actual communication and transformation of love, which the bride has now attained in this life, in which she is freed from and protected against all temporal disturbances and changes, and divested and purged of imperfection, penalties and clouds in the sense and spirit, she feels a new spring. Spiritual freedom and breath and gladness. Meister Eckhart said at one point, the nearer we come to God, the younger we become. The nearer we return to our source, he says, the younger we become. So a new spring. And she hears the sweet voice of her bridegroom, who is her sweet nightingale, renewing and refreshing the substance of the soul with the sweetness and mellowness of his voice. Calls her as he would call one now disposed to make a journey to eternal life. And she hears this pleasant voice urge, and then he quotes the song of songs, arise, make haste, my love, my dove, my beautiful one, come. For now the winter has passed, the rains have gone far off, the flowers have appeared in our land, the time of pruning has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard. Wonderful the way he brings his own mystical poetry and the Song of Song all together into a seamless whole. The nuns write, a nightingale sings in a flowering almond tree, announcing the arrival of the eternal spring, while the flames rise on the thorn bush without destroying it, representing eternity. And these two last lines really for John are heaven. We've sort of left the earthly realm now. We are in the place of heaven. Then this very poetic, very mysterious final line really ends the whole thing with. Que nadie lo miraba. Aminadab tampoco parecía, y el cerco sosegaba, y la caballería a vista de las aguas descendía. A very mysterious writing. Just here a quote from Gerald Brennan. Gerald Brennan was one of the Bloomsbury sect. He went to live near Granada. He wrote a very famous book called South of Granada, sort of fell in love with Spain. He wrote a wonderful commentary on John's poetry, one of the best, a bit old now, but still one of the best. He writes at these lines, he was very taken by this verse, he writes, "I do not think that in the whole of Spanish poetry there is a passage that calls up so vividly the Castilian Andalusian scene before the incidents of motor transport. The string of horses or mules descending slowly to the river, the vague suggestion of frontier warfare now over, that sense of endless repetition of something that has been done countless times before, being done again, which is the gift of Spain to the restless and progressive nation." And these last two wonderful lines, with their gently reassuring fall, "The horses descending within sight of the waters are lifted out of time and made the symbol of peace of this land of eternal return." A better description of that poetry. The nuns write that they've used the icon of the Dormition of the Virgin. Interestingly enough, an icon that's also used very much by El Greco. El Greco uses the same icon for the famous burial of Count Orgaz in Toledo. He uses the soul as a little baby in the hands of Christ. Christ, they say, takes the soul in his arms like an infant to indicate our final destiny. Palaces recall the first mansions we saw in the first image, representing the union of the church militant on earth with the church triumphant in glory and eternity. Not much to add, really. So there you go. I hope you'll enjoy reading more of John, and you'll get some useful spiritual profit from it. Thank you for coming, sister. Thanks for the Kit Kat.
it's quarter to one.
So you can go if you want. Stay, ask a question.
How much overlap between him writing the poem and then creating the commentary?
Yeah. The first, I didn't say this at the beginning, the getting together all the accounts, it seems that he began composing it in prison in 1578. One of the sisters says that when she saw him after imprisonment, he'd reached the stanza 31, O Nymphas de Cordier. He'd written under the stanza 31. Gerald Brennan suggests that the first 10 stanzas were written in prison, and the later ones, with their beautiful nature imagery, written in Andalusia. So the first ones, we're not quite sure which were written where, but it looks as though the first one, "Where have you gone, my beloved? Those terrible lines here." Those were definitely to be written in prison. The most beautiful flowers and emeralds and water and everything, they seem to have been written in Andalusia, certainly refined in Andalusia. The last 5 stanzas, starting con Témonas Amado, are said to have been written after a conversation he had in Beas. Passing through this town, he asked Madre Francisca de la Madre de Dios her manner of prayer, and she said it consisted of looking on God's beauty and rejoicing that God possessed it. And this, it said, inspired the last 5 stanzas, "Let us rejoice, beloved, and let us go forth to behold ourselves in your beauty." So that's what we think, from the source of that, what we think. Seem to be composed in 3 or 4 different bits. The commentary was written as we heard at the beginning, in an attempt to shed general light on poetry. It was done at the request of Anna de Jesus, the lady I mentioned earlier. And the commentary was definitely written in Granada, because Anna was in Granada. So he definitely wrote it during that. He had 5 or 6 years in Granada, which were quite peaceful, and he definitely wrote it. what would happen was he would write it longhand, and then that would circulate, and people would write copies of it. So we have, three scholar bits. I think we have two versions. Yeah, we have three manuscripts with two versions of the canticle. We have one that's in the Carmelite Convent of San Luca de Alameda, and this has comments on it with John's own hand on it. It's known as the San Luca version. This actually has 39 stanzas. It doesn't have 40. And the Nympha stanza comes three-quarters of the way through. The second arrangement, which you have here, apparently made 6 or 7 years later, is called the Cheyenne version. This is the oldest, the late version. This was made when he was prior in Granada. And this is when he added stanza number 11. Reveal your presence, and may the vision of your beauty be my death. For the sickness of love is not cured except by your very presence and image. So that one was added later. So it's quite a complicated. As with all John's scholarship, it's quite complicated because we often have two or three versions of the poetry.
So John was pretty much completed it before he begins to write the poetry.
Looks like that, yeah. I mean, he did. It's like a symphony. Vaughan Williams. Vaughan Williams writes a symphony, and then after the first performance, he changes a few bits. And then often happens with composers, they fiddle around with it. It looks as though he did a version and he wasn't quite happy, so he played around with it. So what you've got here is what we think is probably his final version, or the version he was happiest with. But the San Luca version is in existence. It's in the Tabernacle.
I beg your pardon?
26, the last line. Eight.
Yeah.
No longer knew anything and lost the herd which I was following.
Yeah. What about it?
What's the herd?
The herd? Do you want to hear his commentary on it?
Well, okay.
See if you can throw some general light. As I say, it doesn't do to be too literal, I think, with these. This is why I always use the icons, because the icons can help stimulate this move from the icon. He writes, it should, now this is, you know, John, whenever he writes, scholar of Salamanca. It should be known that however spiritual a soul may be, there always remains, until she reaches the state of perfection, some little herd of appetites, satisfactions, and other imperfections, natural or spiritual, after which she follows, in an effort to pasture and satisfy them. In the intellect, there usually reside some imperfect appetites for knowing things. Yeah, I know a lot of people like that. The will is usually allowed to be captivated by some small appetites and gratifications of his own. These may involve temporal things, such as some little possession, or the attachment to one object more than to another, some presumptions, judgments, some little peccadillos, and other small things having a worldly savour or tinge. These latter may be concerned natural things, such as eating, drinking, finding more gratification in this food rather than another, sitting in one place rather than another. But they may concern spiritual things, such as the desire for spiritual satisfactions, or other trifles we will never finish listing, characteristic of spiritual persons who are not yet perfect. This is very sensitive doctrine. He's very stressful that we shouldn't get attached to one form of prayer. And he's very strong that we shouldn't get attached to spiritual consolations. That's very dangerous. He said a spiritual consolation can become a replacement for God. I mean, his way, to be honest, his way, John's way, is very severe. It's a very severe way. Someone once said it's like you're faced with a cliff face, and there's no holds, there's no footholds or anything. You're just faced with this great big cliff face. Now, I think there's two things happening. One, he's aware that the spiritual journey is the cliff face. Certainly for him, it's the cliff face. He's a spiritual Chris Bonington or Sherpa Tenzin. I mean, he is a spiritual mountaineer. However, he also realises, there's a pastoral touch, he also realises that for the majority of us, that's not the case. We're not all like him. And he never imposed on other people his own penances, his own mortification. However, in these lines, this thing about little attachments is very consistent in saying that we shouldn't have little attachments. And then, another key problem, in the memory, there are usually many wanderings, cares, and useless imaginings. So again, in our prayer, in our lives, we're always saying, if only I bought a house 5 years ago, sold a house last week. We're constantly, these are the, if only, these are the little birds, the swift-winged birds that are flying around. There are many useless hopes, joys, sorrows and fears which we follow. Some have more and others less of this herd, and they follow until, having entered the interior wine bar to drink, all are transformed in love, and they lose it entirely. In the wine bar, these herds of imperfections are more easily consumed than the rust and tarnish of metal is consumed by fire. Thus the soul now feels free of all these childish likes and trifles which she pursues. And so she can now say, and lost the herd which I was following. You have to be careful with John, when you? You'll find that his commentary is usually very clear.
And that's the ascent of Mount Carmel.
No, that's the commentary on the spiritual canon.
It's called a commentary.
And you'll find that usually he's very precise about each. Every single word, every single phrase, every single image has a purpose. It's 5 to 1. Shall we call it a day?
Yeah.
So thank you all very much.